Now more of the Wild About Pets radio show on TalkZone.com. Once again, here's Susan Frank.
Welcome back to the show and our discussion with our guest, Susie Gilbert, who's the author of Fly Away, How a Wild Bird Rehabber Sought Adventure and Found Her Wings. Susie not only is the author of this marvelous book, but as the title implies, she is also a wild bird rehabilitator. And we were just talking about songbirds and cats and how cats are really having a great effect in decimating the songbird population. So the question is, well, how do songbirds really affect the world or us? Or why do we as people really need to care about this issue and making sure the songbirds survive and are healthy in their numbers, Susie?
There's a number of different reasons. I mean, songbirds are part of the food chain. If you lose the songbirds, you lose all the hawks and owls. You lose, many different types of wildlife. Songbirds are just amazing creatures in themselves, though. I mean, they are magical, beautiful creatures. But they also, they eat bugs. And I know people are concerned about bugs. They eat, there are sort of, from a human point of view, there's good bugs and bad bugs. But, you know, birds eat them all. And,
yes.
They eat things like mosquitoes that people don't want around. Mosquitoes, I mean, if you're talking about mosquitoes, there's West Nile.
Which is a big concern.
It is a big concern, and it's an introduced virus. You know, it didn't start out in this country, but it was brought here, and it's a terrible thing. It decimates the populations of different kinds of birds. I mean, people concentrate on crows because mm-hmm. they're so easily found, but songbirds can die from West Nile too. It's just they're so small, people don't see them.
I remember a few years ago when this was very prevalent in the news, and everywhere you looked up in the trees, at least in the Midwest, you know, speaking about, you know, I'm coming out of Chicago, yeah. Everyone was highly aware that the trees were quiet and we were not seeing the birds. Susie, are the populations starting to come back from a few years ago?
They do come back, but the problem is West Nile is cyclical. So the populations rebound, and then West Nile hits again, and it's difficult. It's it's really a roller coaster.
If people wanted to know more about West Nile virus, I suppose that can be found on the internet.
Sure. There's lots of information there, but what you have to be careful of is there are a lot of especially town governments decide that, the best thing to do is just spray. And then they put poison everywhere to get rid of the mosquitoes, which, this is not helpful either.
Right.
Because if the West Nile doesn't get the birds, the poisons will. So there are so few people who have actually become sick from West Nile. It's a tragedy when it does happen. But it's not the sort of plague that alarmist newspapers make it out to be.
Sure, that's good to know.
Well, as far as people go, as far as mm-hmm. birds go, it is pretty much a plague.
Right, yes. Here's just a question. If people are handling birds, let's say picking them up and getting them into the box and trying to take care of them and get them to a rehabilitator, is there any chance of contracting the virus through a bird?
Very, very slim. You need to be bitten by a mosquito.
Okay, that's good to know, too.
Yeah, but if you are handling any sort of wildlife, it's a good idea to just wash your hands afterwards. You know, you don't have to douse yourself with bleach or anything, but just wash your hands, that's all.
Let's talk now a lot more about your book and your life as a bird rehabilitator. And I would like to say that I was instantly drawn into your book. Your writing style, Susie, is effortless. And it's so personal, and you share your family with us and you tell us all your stories, as I mentioned before, the triumphs and the tragedies, and you even share your dreams, which for me, Susie, really help me understand why you do what you do. And as you can see, you can hear, I find the book marvelous, and I'm actually finding that I'm missing being a part of your life now that I finished it.
Oh.
You know, it's so personal and so wonderful. But what I want to do now is get to the photographs, and let's actually talk about some of these. I'm going to kind of let you choose which of the stories you might want to talk, although I know I'm going to want to talk about George the Crows, because I was amazed at what I did not know about crows. So, you know, that'll be my pick, but we're going to, you know, start with picture one, because, of course, that was your first songbird.
My first bird.
So we'll kind of cruise through that, and then, you know, we can kind of go through and scroll through the photographs, and I know we probably won't get through all of them. But I do, I wanted to put these up. So if anyone was reading your book, besides seeing the lovely illustrations, the drawings of the birds that you have in the book, I thought this would be a fun way for people also to see the actual birds that you're talking about. So people can be reading and referring back to this website.
Oh, that's great.
Okay. So let's get started looking at some of these and hearing some of the stories.
Okay. Well, let's see. The house finch. Yep. My first bird. And, he was a wonderful little bird. One of my points in writing the book is I wanted people to see that all of these birds have distinct personalities. They all are such individuals. Even, you know, you look at the tiny little house finch, and they fly in groups, so there are a lot of them, but every one is different. And the first one that I had was this wonderful little bird. He had had a dislocated wing, and I kept him throughout the whole summer. He became the foster parent for a whole bunch of different little fledgling songbirds, and he was such a great bird. Unfortunately, he never was able to recover enough to be released. He could fly, but not strongly enough, and he ended up going to a wonderful little nature sanctuary down in South Carolina.
Yes, and I suppose, obviously, your goal and all rehabilitators' goal is to be able to release these wild animals back. And would you say percentages are in that favor, or how does it really work out where some just can't be released and must live their lives, you know, with the assistance of humans?
Yeah, it's hard because you do want them to go back out again. Rehabbers, you know, we love these birds so much, and we hate to see them in a cage. I really can't stand seeing birds in a cage. If it's temporary, that's one thing. But if they have to live their lives out, you have to balance out the bird's injury, its personality, and whether being in a cage for the rest of its life will be so miserable for it that it's better off to put them to sleep. And sometimes that happens. There are birds that just they want their freedom so badly that they stop eating, or they'll just bash themselves against the side of the cage, and they just can't live in captivity. On the other hand, there are birds who come in and they seem to take to it, and they thrive, they do well, and they can be foster parents, they can be education birds. You know, they can live their lives out in a sanctuary and people can see what they look like up close. And in that case, you know, it's okay.
Okay. I have some photographs of the common grackle, and I know you have many stories about them, but I particularly wanted to talk about them because I have a cousin whose name is Joey, and if she could ask a question right now, it would be that she has many grackles that come to her feeders about the fall, and Susie, they come in, like, basically swarm, and so they're all over her yard, and they eat all the food at her feeders, and she's wondering, is there anything that can be done to discourage that so that there's something left in the feeders for all the other songbirds that she wants to feed?
Right. Now, do they come for a certain amount of time? Because there's a grackle migration, and they come through, and they are just a horde of birds.
Yes, that's what she's been seeing.
Yeah, and they stay for a few days, and then they leave. So in that case, the best thing to do is just put out a lot of food.
and I guess the songbirds are just going to have to, the other ones are going to have to wait their turn.
They have to sort of work around it. What you can also do is there are feeders that you can get through through places like, well, you know, your local Blue Seal probably has them, or you can get them through Duncraft, which is an internet bird supply store that's wonderful. And there are feeders where you can set it for the weight of the bird. And so if you set it so that it's very sensitive, the bird, if it's a little songbird, it will land on the platform of the feeder and be able to eat and no problem. But a heavier bird, such as a grackle, will cause the platform to move downward, and then it covers up the seeds.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's a great suggestion. Okay, I'll make sure that my cousin knows about that.
So all those bigger, you know, bigger sort of heavier bully birds like blue jays and grackles and that kind of thing. Then if you set aside one feeder like that, then at least you know that there's one place where the songbirds can go and they won't be driven away by the bigger ones.
Speaking of blue jays, you write about the first babies that you really started raising. And you had mentioned early on, Susie, about the feeding every 20 minutes. And throughout your book, you really, I can tell, consternated, and probably every rehabber, should you be taking baby birds? So let's move to photo number 7. And why don't you tell us a little bit about the story of these blue jays that came to you?
Okay, well, these blue jays, a woman saw the parent get hit by a car, and she waited and waited, and the second parent did not come. So she picked up the entire nest and brought it over to me, and she was so concerned because she knew that nobody was going to come and help these babies. And these blue jays in the picture, they were my first baby songbirds, my first tiny ones.
Mm-hmm. And they are so tiny. I love that.
So
there's a picture here, and is that, are we looking at your hand there?
Yeah.
On the rim of the little box? It gives a great perspective, and you can just see how tiny these little birds are. They're like a finger length, aren't they?
Yes, they're very tiny, but they have huge open mouths. They want to be fed all the time. They really are little food processing machines. They're unbelievable the way they eat. And, you know, the songbird metabolism is just so fast and furious that they have to eat all the time. That's another reason why people call and say, oh, I think my child would learn so much by raising a little baby bird. And they can't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you really can't. The feeding is nonstop.
You are talking about literally every 20 minutes.
When they're little, when they're this age, yeah. When they get to be bigger, say the next picture where they're a little bit bigger, the feedings get spaced out a little bit more. But it's a real long process.
And in reading your book, one gets that sense because you talk about, as you were going about your life with your family and going places with your children, you were taking baskets filled with baby birds along with you because,
running
you know,
along.
You can't stop your life, but you can't stop feeding the birds.
Right, right. Absolutely.
I wonder, though, you probably didn't get a lot of sleep during those periods either, did you?
Well, luckily, the babies knock off for the night.
Well, thank goodness for that.
Yeah, because can you imagine? But it's sun up to sundown, and then they sleep for the night. But then, of course, in the middle of the night, the baby owls wake up. So you're in trouble no matter what you do if you're a rehabber. This is why people end up specializing, because there's just, you know, it is sort of a never-ending schedule.
Can I ask, have you decided, moving forward, if you are going to be specializing in a way that you also were discussing or trying to figure out in your book?
Oh, if special, yes.
Yes.
I did, because there was just no way humanly possible that I could keep up this pace. And also, my children are now teenagers, and they need to be driven everywhere.
Yes.
So I just don't have, you know, the time to put into nestling songbirds anymore, unfortunately. There is a wonderful woman who lives in Connecticut named Jane Amico, and she runs the Recovery Wing, and she does only songbirds. And she has a wonderful website, www.therecoverywing.com.
Mm.
And you can look on there and see all kinds of songbirds that she's raised. And it's really amazing. But as for me, I needed birds. I needed to take care of birds whose metabolisms were slower. I mean, that's just what it came down to, because I just didn't have the time. And I work alone. I have no volunteers. I have no help.
That's right.
So I'm doing crows and raptors now.
Oh, that's great. Oh, you know, and thank you for sharing that. And that makes perfect sense. What shall we talk about next? Should we talk about raptors?
I wanted to make one point. Now
sure.
That I see, you know, we were talking about the blue jays. They're the first picture of them tiny and then bigger.
Mm-hmm.
The last one there is a picture of one of the released blue jays coming to my hand for food. And the thing is, that blue jay had been raised with other blue jays. So, you know, what the thing you don't want is to have a single bird, no matter what, you know, especially with songbirds, you don't want to raise a single bird and have him think that humans are the creatures he should be hanging around with. You know, he'll come to me, this bird here, Harry, he'll come to me for a handout, but he knows he's a blue jay, and he'll go home or go back to, you know, his group and hang out with the blue jays. He doesn't think that I'm his companion.
And probably besides just helping him know, or any blue jay or some birds know who they are, they need that community of the same creatures. They're not meant to live isolated, are they?
No, absolutely not.
And unfortunately, but it's been a long time, I think, for us in caring for animals to understand that a lot of animals are not meant to be isolated in cages or by themselves.
Yeah.
We are going to take another break right now, so we'll be back. Please stay tuned. More right after this.